Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. I bet you haven't spent much time lately thinking about the Panama Canal. Well, we're going to change that this morning. The canal is celebrating its 100th anniversary, and it's in the process of getting a major makeover. On top of all that, a new centennial exhibit opens in Kansas City next month. But first up today, imagine being in your home, going about your own business, when the police raid your house with assault weapons. You'd be terrified, right? And if you hadn't done anything illegal, you'd want to know why the cops chose you. Well, 2 years ago, that's what happened to a Leawood couple, and getting answers they wanted didn't prove to be very easy. That's because police records aren't as open as you might think in Kansas. Channel 41 just did a major investigation of all this, and here to talk about it are Karen Dillon. She's an investigative producer for local NBC affiliate KSHB. And Karen, nice to have you.
Thank you, Steve.
Melissa Yeager is also here. She's a reporter for KSHB. Melissa, nice to have you, too.
Thanks for having us
here today.
Good morning.
Well, let's play the opening minute or so of this series, which ran just last week.
March 31st, 2010, Prairie Village, Kansas. A standoff ends with police shooting Susan Stuckey.
When they came out to my house that day to inform me they had killed my daughter, needless to say, the horrible shock that I was in, and I said, I want a thorough investigation.
April 20th, 2012, Leawood, Kansas.
They came in, had me on the ground, face down, hand behind my head, staring at some guy's boots as he stood over me with an assault rifle.
The Johnson County Sheriff's Office raids the home of Addie and Bob Hart.
We were just screaming, you know, you're in the wrong house. You're in the wrong house.
January 22nd, 2014, Sherman County, Kansas. After police arrest Brenda Sewell for marijuana and booked her in the Sherman County Jail.
We kept telling the jailers and the police in there that she's sick, she won't quit vomiting.
Brenda became seriously ill and died.
Three separate incidents involving law enforcement, but all of these families have one thing in common. When they went searching for answers in public records, the state denied their request. That's because in Kansas, a state that prides itself on its rich history of being a free state, law enforcement records, investigations, and warrants are closed.
Huh. Karen Dillon, talk to me for a moment. Why is it so difficult to get basic police reports? And I'm talking about documents like probable cause statements, which are routinely, you know, seen by reporters in on the Missouri side of the state line. Why is it so hard to get this stuff in Kansas?
Basically, the legislature 30 years ago closed the records. So, you know, in fact, if the police were to turn the records over to someone and the prosecutor became angry about that, or, you know, that they leaked the information, there's actually a misdemeanor. It makes it a misdemeanor. The law makes it a misdemeanor crime for the police to give us that information.
You know, I was amazed that this all happened three decades ago, and yet we're sitting here today talking about this. Why hasn't the media, why haven't any other sort of interest groups sort of weighed in here to get these records opened up?
They have been. Year after year in the legislature, the Kansas Press Association and the Broadcasters Association and University of Kansas law professors, and there's been a number of people who have worked together to try to – there was a Sunshine Coalition group, actually, that tried – that would bring a bill forward, and it would never even get out of committee. Sometimes they couldn't even get it heard. And the lobby by the prosecutors, as we've seen in law enforcement, is big.
And the prospects for getting the records opened up this session, iffy, or where would you put it?
I'm going to let Melissa talk about
that. Yeah, Melissa, fire away.
Well, I think there's been some movement. They didn't put it on the – it made it out of the House committee and made it out of the House 113-10, which was substantial.
Landslide, yes.
So overwhelming numbers out of the House.
Right. And then when it went to committee in the Senate, it was really stripped of – having those probable cause affidavits. The only thing it would have done at that point is allow search warrants to be open, and that would be 30 days after they were executed and only to the person searched. So
right.
There was a lot of opposition to how the bill kind of played out there, and it didn't land on the calendar for a vote last week. You know, there's kind of a long shot if it goes to this kind of joint committee, they could still bring it before the Senate and move it forward. But as I talked to you about it earlier, it's kind of like an onside kick. You hope it happens before time runs out, but we'll see what happens.
And Melissa, just for the sake of some context here, Kansas, you called this a series the dark state. I mean, Kansas is exceptional in how closed it is when it comes to handing out these records, right?
Yeah, I grew up in Kansas, so I say we, but we're really the only state in the country where these records are presumed closed.
The only state in the country.
Right. In other states,
that's correct.
It is fully accurate that in other states they are open with redactions, whereas a prosecutor or police think that the information might damage their investigation or might be painful to a victim or identify a victim. They can redact that information out of it, and that's how most states work.
But Karen, when we're talking here about these records, I want to just be clear and get everyone on board here. These, for one record, is a statement of probable cause, and this record, again, as a former cop reporter myself, I know these records well. These are just really basic reports that indicate what happened here. You know, what the first report that comes out that sort of indicates what went down, right?
Right. Yeah, it's the who, what, when, where, why. That were, you know, and how, why, mm-hmm. why they are arresting you, that kind of thing. And it just, it details, the facts of the case, the basic facts of the case. You know, we use the example of Chris Lane, the athlete from Oklahoma. He was an Australian. And last summer, some boys in Oklahoma, in Duncan, Oklahoma, They were bored, they said. They told the police later, very quickly, I guess, after this incident happened. But they were bored, and they were looking for a thrill, and they decided to shoot somebody. And Chris Lane was jogging down the street, and they saw him, and they shot him dead. And people came to his rescue, but he couldn't be saved. We knew that information within 24 hours. It was all over the world. You know, it was a big story. And it was because the probable cause affidavit was possible, and the affidavit that goes with the arrest records was there and detailed all that information. It didn't detail, I'm sure, it didn't give you the interviews and the underlying investigation that the police were doing.
We're not talking about that, sort of the internal guts of an investigation.
Exactly.
We're talking about just the cursory sort of the who, what, when, where,
and
why, what happened.
That information would never have been released in Kansas. You would not know that. We have many cases, that sort of talk about that.
And I would say that this is the very basic information that police have to present to a judge to say why they arrested you.
Yeah.
And I think that most people think that's a pillar of democracy, that police should have to justify why they've arrested you. And that's what this information is supposed to be. What did they tell a judge in order to get the warrant to arrest you?
And again, these records that we're talking about are available on the Missouri side of the state line and in virtually every other state in the country.
Right.
Right. Yeah, our investigation detailed some cases, in Kansas or in Missouri and in Oklahoma. And it talked about, Nebraska and Arkansas and states surrounding Kansas. But both Melissa and I have worked in the state of Florida, which has some of the best open records laws in the country, and when we came to when we were hired, to work in this area, we were both stunned at the lack of information we got in Kansas.
That's interesting. Well, let me get our listeners involved here. Perhaps you saw this series last week on Channel 41, the Dark State series. Have you tried to obtain police records in Kansas? Were you able to get them, and what did it take for you to latch onto them? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can also email us at uptodate@kcur.org or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Well, let's walk through these three cases. Melissa, I'll come to you here that you guys uncovered that raise all kinds of questions about why these records have been kept under wraps. Let's go back to 2010 and that Prairie Village case involving a young woman, Susan Stuckey. Walk us through that one in a little more detail, Melissa. What happened there?
Well, Susan Stuckey, her mom says she had been struggling with some mental illness, and
yes.
she had made repeated calls to 911.
She being the mother or the daughter?
The daughter, mm-hmm. Susan.
Right.
She had made repeated calls to 911 and, was asking for police to bring her cigarettes to come to her house and shoot her, wanted to die suicide by cop. And the police were aware of this, and it kind of came to a head one day. Police say that she threatened to burn down her apartment complex, and she had been acting strange around the apartment complex in the weeks leading up as well, and kind of scaring some of the neighbors as well. But the response was they sent their 17-member CERT team, which, you know, is what you think of a SWAT team. It's their, you know, certified group.
You had that in your story, 17 members surrounding this place, again, with circumstances that most people, the cops understood what was going on here.
Right, know. You know, and keep in mind the mental health of this woman who is scared and frightened and obviously does not want to come out of her apartment. They had a negotiator speaking with her, and then eventually, after a couple hours, rammed through the door. She was first armed with a broomstick, then with a baseball bat, was taking swings at the police. Police tried to tase her. The taser didn't connect. And then she, you know, you hear on the audio of it that she, you hear an officer say, put down the knife, and then you hear three gunshots. So that's how that ended. And Susan's mom, Beverly, was just wanted more information, I think, as any parent would want to know the details of what happened. How did it get to this point?
Yeah.
And was denied those records and had to fight for two years.
And thousands of dollars.
Right. Had to hire an attorney. When she first asked Prairie Village Police for the records, they said, you'll never get them, is what her account is.
And once she did get them, you know, Melissa, those open records show that the officer talking to the woman, he wasn't trained in negotiations. He wasn't trained in these non-lethal ways to subdue her that the police didn't use that day. But her mother had to hire an attorney to find out that information. That's why these records are important, right?
Right. And I think that was our goal of this series is, you know, there's been this characterization that this is a media issue, that the media just wants salacious details of these crimes. But these are really, I think when you see it's everyday people who can't get basic information about what their encounters with law enforcement are like, you really get the picture of how very scary this is.
So it wasn't so much that her mother, Susan Stuckey's mother, was blaming police, at least initially. She just wanted to know what happened to her daughter.
Right. She wanted more information. It just didn't seem right to her. Like, how did we go from her making calls to a SWAT team surrounding her apartment? And she wanted more details about that and couldn't get them.
Did you have a sense of again, hindsight is always 20/20, and police deal with this all the time. And we're not there, and we don't know what that's like. And I want to acknowledge that right up front. But was there a sense, you know, Melissa, of what police might have other options they might have considered that day that they didn't turn to?
Well, there certainly was the option of non-lethal force with tasers, beanbags, pepper spray, things like that.
Beanbags meaning what, you shoot beanbags?
It's like a gun, but it's a beanbag, so it hurts, but it's not lethal.
It won't kill you. Yeah.
Right. It'll stun you pretty well. I don't think you want to get hit by one in one of those.
No, thank you.
There was a mental health facility that offered their assistance and were denied. And so so I think those are kind of the holes. And I think you've pointed out as well, there's a lot of information we don't know on law enforcement's side because the records aren't open. They may have gone through, you know, everything they could have in all of these stories, but we don't know because we only know what documents we're able to get and the interviews we're able to do. Yeah.
But we do know in the Prairie Village case, the city eventually settled with the mother for $560,000 just last November.
$560,000. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Again, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUI. We're talking to a couple of great folks here from Channel 41 KSHB about their series last week, Dark State, that chronicled closed records in Kansas, closed police records, and why those records are closed. Perhaps they should be considered to be open. Again, if you're interested in joining our conversation, 816-235-2888. Should there be restrictions on obtaining police records to protect some people's privacy or not? 816-235-2888, or email us to updatedate@kcur.org. Karen Dillon, we have a call. Had a call here from Darren who wanted to ask, do your guests know the legislature's mindset in passing the law 30 years ago that led to all this? What was its reasoning back then? What happened?
We do. It's been described as a knee-jerk reaction to an incident that occurred. There was a Topeka newspaper reporter who
An aggressive reporter.
Yeah, an aggressive reporter.
Maybe too aggressive. We can argue that later. Yeah.
But she, Cynthia Pig, I believe her name was, she was in Lawrence, and she heard that police were searching for two men in a stolen vehicle, and they were wanted for questioning and a murder. And so she ran over to the Douglas County prosecutor's office and started asking for the arrest warrant affidavit. Yeah. And at that time, I believe the law was, and they are in most states, you know, until the arrest record, until the arrest warrant is executed, mm-hmm. served on the suspect, that you can't get that, you know, get the details of why they want them and that kind of thing.
Right.
And so, but apparently they had a process where a reporter could go into the courthouse and go pick up those records. Even they were just all in a pile, and you could just pick them up. And she got the document. She verified the information. She had several conversations with the prosecutor, who said, "You cannot do this. You know, you cannot publish this because it's against the law." That kind of thing. Anyway, to make a story short, the newspaper published the story, knowing that the prosecutor was very upset about it.
And there was a consequence to this. There were two people wanted. One wasn't found. At least
one was not found, and the newspaper itself was. The prosecutor charged them with a crime, Stouffer Communications, and then the Supreme Court ruled, you know, that this document was in a public place, and you can't, when you have truthful information, you can't prosecute somebody for that.
So a critic might say that to some extent the media brought this onto itself.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
Going back 30
and
years
Vern
ago.
Miller, who was the attorney general at the time.
A flamboyant attorney general at that.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Well, then he went to the legislature and said, "Hey, we've got to change the law. We can't allow this to ever happen again." And this knee-jerk reaction, the law was passed, and we were shut out.
And so for 30 years, we've been living with these more restrictive
laws. The public
laws
and the media, yes.
In Kansas. Okay. Let's go to some phone calls here. Let's go to Joy from Kansas City, Missouri. She's a sister of one of the victims, still trying to get some records and can't get them. Joy, welcome to our show. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Joy.
I just wanted to let everybody know that we are in that situation, and I have tried and tried. The rest of my family has tried and tried, and we can't get our records either. We were told the same thing, that we would never get them. And I'm in a situation where I don't have enough money to hire a lawyer to be able to get my records. So I'm just between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, Melissa, and just to get everyone up to speed with Joy, this is the case involving the woman who died in Sherman County, Kansas, right? And
right.
Set that up for us again, what happened here.
Well, and Joy's on the phone, can add some of that. But Joy and her sister were coming back from Colorado, mm-hmm. were stopped in western Kansas, in near Goodland, Kansas, and were speeding and had marijuana in the car that they had bought in that Brenda had bought her sister in Colorado.
And police out there now very vigilant about this, given the new law in Colorado. Yeah.
Arrested the two sisters, took them to jail, also confiscated Brenda's medications that she had for a myriad of health conditions. And she was never able to get her medication while she was in jail, got very sick and was not taken to the hospital for quite some time, finally was brought back very quickly, and then the next day passed away. And Joy witnessed all of this, was in the cell with her.
Joy, the report on 41 chronicled all this, and it was just an absolutely horrific story. And to hear what you had to endure, as you look back on it now, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking that we were treated like animals. I'm thinking that nobody cared. I really don't know what to think. I am just beside myself that I can't get anything done. I just want justice for my sister. I want to know exactly what happened when they took her out of my jail cell and closed my doors to where I could not see anymore. They did not want me to see what was going on with my sister. And I want to know all that. It's all on camera, but I can't get that either.
Karen Dillon from Channel 41, the offshoot of all this is the police out there said that Joy's sister died of natural causes.
Correct.
Which, again, I'm not a doctor. I wasn't there. But there are red flags about that immediately after watching your report.
The coroner told me that he did not know about her illnesses. He did not know the medication she was taking. I can't say, you know, we didn't go down the path of having somebody else look at the autopsy records.
They would take her medicine away from her. Why?
I'll let Joy tell you that.
Joy, do you have an answer to that?
She had them in one of those pill cases that you can buy at the store so that you don't have to carry your whole pill case with you.
Right.
And she did not, and the bottles did not have the prescriptions on them. Oh. She didn't have bottles with the prescription labels on them. But she did have her paper scripts in her purse. But they still took a day and a half to figure out what pill she was taking, which I can do in about 20 minutes on a computer.
And what was your sister's condition, Joy? She needed the medicine. Why?
Because she had several disorders that were controlled by medication, and she needed them daily.
Fibromyalgia.
Which is what?
It's something that it's an illness that causes all kinds of different problems, but a lot of pain, aching in the bones, and things like that. She also had severe arthritis. Anything else?
Sorgen's
high blood pressure.
Sorgen's
disease.
Or syndrome, I guess it's called, that you can't retain water, and that can lead to dehydration.
So again, we have
that's the other thing, because she had to have water all the time because she couldn't absorb it, so she had to be drinking a lot. The jail cell was really dirty. The faucet actually sat on the tank of the toilet, so the water line and the sewer line run together, which is a big no-no. And there was like rust, and as it's been described to us, rust and just, it was just nasty.
So again, Melissa, we have a case here where someone wants some basic information about the death of a loved one and can't get it.
Right. And Joy would like to see that investigation, the investigation police did. Goodland Police and Sherman County Sheriff and the Sherman County Prosecutor all asked KBI to investigate. But the provision in the law is that if a person dies of natural causes, KBI can decline. And that's what they did in this case. And so it's the Goodland Police Department investigating the Sherman County Sheriff's Department.
They're all married and intertwined.
There are several conflicts of interest there. And the investigation is still it was complete at the end of January. But nobody has seen this investigation.
Wow. Well, Joy, I'm so sorry for your loss, and I appreciate you calling in, and we wish you the best of luck going forward to try to unravel all this.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Joy. Mm-hmm. Dick from Overland Park. Dick, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks, Dick.
My question, I heard the district attorney in Johnson County in a question and answer about this issue. And he defended it on the basis of privacy laws and such as HIPAA. How do the other states get around those rules? And is that a legitimate defense or is it phony?
Well, I think he has a legitimate concern about private information being made public. But what other states do, which I'll give the example of Florida, they have certain provisions of what then police redact. Basically, they take a big Sharpie marker and mark through it so we can't see it. Some of those things would be the name and personal information and identifying information of rape victims, personal information of witnesses, of anything that they think would jeopardize their investigation. So the idea is there's this presumption the record is open, but if there's information they need to hold back, that they can do so.
Does that help, Dick?
It does. It seemed to be a little bit open to question if all the other states were able to manage it, but yet apparently this is an organizational position by the District and County Attorneys Association to rather vigorously oppose it.
Right. Okay, Dick, I appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Rebecca from Kansas City, Missouri. Rebecca, you're on the show. Good morning.
Yes, thank you. I thought it was kind of ironic. It at least appears to me that if they're fighting so vigorously to keep this information away from citizens, kind of gives the impression that they have something to hide. I think it's ironic in that I think we've heard of police officers often when you get stopped for a traffic infraction, they may say, you don't have any drugs or contraband or anything like that in your vehicle, do you? And you, of course, say no. And then they say, well, then you don't mind if we take a look. And so people generally go along with that. It just seems ironic that, and perhaps, in, you know, kind of creates a presumption that they're trying to hide something rather than protect people's HIPAA's rights and so forth.
That so Rebecca, your point is that the police would have a natural reason to want to open up the records to sort of clear away any doubt here.
I think in order to have a trust relationship with the police, they need to establish that trust by letting us have the information that we need for very good reasons. I think, you know, police encounters probably ought to be videotaped. I think that's been successful in other states. I think in, to create that trust, we need to have transparency.
Yeah. Rebecca, thank you for your comments. And Melissa, any sense, do you hear that? Do any police officers acknowledge that sort of idea that we need more openness here?
Well, certainly a couple of prosecutors have said that to me. And there are a couple of prosecutors in Emporia. And I
was just going to bring that up. Lyon and Chase counties. The records have remained open for more than 30 years. They don't
right.
go by these state rules.
They've pretty much ignored the law because of this. They want that type of transparency.
How can they do that? I mean, how does that work?
Well, they're the prosecutor, so they're ultimately the ones who would file charges, I guess.
The prosecutor in Lyon County told me that when he took office, it was already set up this way. At the time, 30 years ago, when the legislature passed these strict laws, several counties, you know, the judges in the district judges said, we're not going to do this. This is not right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Shawnee County used to be one of the places, and then they finally changed. But in Lyon County, the prosecutor said it was this way when I came in, and the judges have it set up this way, and the system works very well. But, you know, we release the records, and we don't have any problems.
Hmm.
And
no,
we've never had any problems. Never had any problems.
Melissa, just the final case we haven't touched on much yet. April of 2012 in Leawood, the home of Addie and Bob Hart. What happened there?
Well, Addie and Bob woke up. Bob woke up early in the morning of April 20th, and police heard a knock at his door, opened the door, and had a SWAT team all surrounding his door with things to knock down the door, and came in.
So no choice. He had to let them in.
Right. He
had
to let them
warrant.
In.
Yeah.
They had a search warrant. Searched the house, were asking where the children were, brought the whole family down, searched a couch, and basically sat them on a couch in their living room in front of their big picture window for several hours as they searched every bit of their home. And, of course, they left with this warrant, and it said no items taken. So, of course, this family wants to know why were they in our house? What did they suspect? And they were very.
So they weren't arrested. Nothing happened
no,
here.
No, absolutely nothing, and no items taken. And Addie has said that Bob went around the neighborhood, then showing the neighbors this warrant to prove. Because you can imagine it, you see the police
humiliation.
Right. You see the police surrounding one of your neighbors. You may not let your kids go over and play the next day. So he went around the neighborhood, and for a year they had no idea why police came into their home, why the sheriff's deputies came into their home. And same thing, wrote to get the records, were denied. And then later, when they finally went to court, spent thousands of dollars, upwards of $25,000, just to get the records. That's not even now that they're heading to court. Found out that they had done some faulty drug testing of their trash and had actually tested tea leaves. It
tea
had come
leaves, yeah.
back positive for marijuana when
that Addie,
that
I think,
was not.
Addie used to use in her morning routine, getting ready
right,
for whatever her
loose
day.
Loose leaf tea that I think a lot of us use. So,
yeah.
And of course, they were just bewildered how little evidence it took for them to get a warrant to come into their home.
And they were, you know, to make this clear, they were never, ever charged with a crime.
Yeah.
They sat there for a year trying, you know, just trying to get the records, you know, why did you come in her house, you know, and finally filed a lawsuit.
Let's just wrap this up. So where we are now is watching what happens in Topeka. There's some chance that legislation could pass this session that might address this, but the odds probably aren't great.
Right. I think there's a one last Hail Mary that could happen before the end of the session if prosecutors come together and also the lawmakers that are in this committee can come together and draft something that everybody's agreeable on and get it passed. But the end of the session is Friday, so
wow,
we'll see.
Coming up quick. I want to thank Melissa Yeager, a reporter from KSHB, Karen Dillon, an investigative producer for the local NBC affiliate Channel 41. We'll have a link to this series on our website, kcur.org. Thanks for coming in, guys. So
thanks
good to
having
have
us.
You here.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you very much.